Joining us in studio, our old friend John Holyoak from the Bangor Daily News. John, good to see you.
It's good to see you as well.
A lot going on in your world here. Book is out. You're writing a novel that you're working on.
You know, writers write, I guess. We all think that we got a book in us, us newspaper guys. And, you know, sometimes you just stop and you realize, I think I've been writing a book for the last 17 years, one chapter at a time. And maybe I ought to package it and pitch it to somebody and see if anybody's interested.
Well, you talk about it in the foreword. What was the impetus for you to turn this into a book?
You know, everybody who ever has done the outdoors job in at the Bangor Daily News has been a writer who's put books together. It really, you know, I really felt there had to be a book in me somewhere. And it kind of took, you know, the coconut falling on my head, Gilligan's Island reference, but to say, you know, you probably already do have one. You just got to figure out what it is and how to get it out there.
Well, one of the things I've always liked and appreciated about your outdoor columns is the fact that you approach it a little bit differently. You had a previous life as a traditional sports writer covering games, and you didn't come to this as somebody who spent every waking hour as a kid toting a rifle through the woods.
Absolutely. No, I didn't. You know, I got into fishing later in life. We fished as little kids, and then I went away from it for a while and got into fly fishing and had fun with that. But I had not hunted. And, you know, it was a really weird conversation I had with our executive editor at the time, before I became an outdoors columnist, where I told him that this old timer I'd met on a river had been complaining about the Bangor Daily News and what we were doing outdoor coverage wise. We didn't have an outdoor columnist who was writing multiple times a week at the time. And this old timer thought that, you know, that was not fair to the legacy of Bud Levitt and Tom Hennessy, who was writing once a week at that point and was kind of semi-retired. And Mark Woodward, our executive editor, said, yeah, he's right. That might be the right job for somebody. Do you have any interest in that? And that was it. And I said, well, I might have an interest, but I'm not sure I have the aptitude, because a lot of the people that end up in that business of writing outdoor columns, they are real experts in their field when it comes to hunting, fishing, trapping, whatever. And I was a neophyte, as one of my future subjects told me, especially because I had never hunted. And Mark told me, go out and be the everyman and tell the stories that happen out there in the woods and have fun with it. And I think people are going to listen and they're going to read.
But what you, I think, probably already knew and certainly learned along the way, like everything else you write about as a reporter, the stories are about people.
Absolutely. You know, there's no doubt about it. And there's in this book, there are some place stories and some animal stories, but it really, you know, they are people stories. You know, most of them are real people stories. And there are a lot of neat folks that you come in contact with out in the world, in the outdoors. I mean, the first week, here's one for you. The first week that I started as an outdoors columnist back in 2002, I saw a man that I had recognized, and I'd done stories on him and his family before. And he said he was having a rough week. Now, I had just written one outdoors column. That's it. And I said, well, what's going on? What's your rough week? He goes, well, my dad's in the hospital. I got to go visit him. I said, geez, I'm sorry to hear that. What happened? And he said, well, he's a bird hunter. And he went on a bird hunting trip. And before they went out that morning, he went out to the outhouse. And the outhouse got struck by lightning. I went, oh my gosh, I'm sorry. He's in the hospital. Is he okay? He goes, yeah, he's in good spirits. He's recovering. The man was in his 80s. You don't have to be a real rocket scientist at that point to say, you know, boy, that sounds like an outdoor column. And I asked him if his dad would talk about it. And he goes, yeah, he's looking for someone to visit him in the hospital. Go ahead. So I went up, and that was like column number three, and it's in the book.
the column that kicks off the book, one I love because I know your brother very well, but the story of cross-country croquet. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Oh, boy. You know, it's so cross-country croquet is a rough equivalent to Calvin ball, which is no-rules basketball, which my family also plays. But out at our camp on Beach Hill Pond, and it might have been fueled really when my brother was in college, and it might have been a beer-fueled event. But his friends and he would get involved in these games where setting the course was really the key. We put wickets on tree stumps that had rotted. We put them on side hills so you had to play the break. I mean, it was ridiculous. And as it turned out, the next generation, his kids, took a real liking to the sport. My nephews and my niece. It's been a lot of fun. It's you got to play it to believe it.
Well, there are so many wonderful characters in the book as well. Can you talk a little bit about Alvin Terrio?
Alvin, he's just fantastic. A lot of people might not know the name, but they know what he invented. Alvin is he's a fly tire up in Stacyville, Maine. He was a game warden and worked as a game warden so that he could retire with a state retirement that could get him by to be a fly tire. And he invented the maple syrup fly, which many people swear is if you can't catch a brook trout with a maple syrup, then they can't be caught. But he's just a really interesting guy. He grows his own fowl to be used as fly tying material. He keeps all these really in-depth genetic records on what bird ought to be bred with what bird. He's a really interesting guy.
All right, who do you think of? I know the answer already, but I get to read a little poetry when I read this. There are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. The Arctic trails have their secret tales that would make your blood run cold.
That's got to be Jim Carter's favorite, Robert Service. Yeah, Jim Carter, he owned the Sporting Lodge, Munsungan Hunting and Fishing Club, up in northern Maine. I visited him at his camp. He's in the book as well a couple of times. And he was a thinker and a guide, and he liked to just hold forth. And he was the guy who told me that I was a blankety-blank neophyte, because I had not read his favorite poet of all time. And he would recite Robert Service poems, multiple of them, just from memory. He just knew them. And he was a true Maine original, no doubt about it.
Well, and that's got to be, it's not in the official job description, but it's got to be a part of it. Can you be a guide if you're not a great storyteller?
I don't think you can. There's a lot of time sitting on your butt in a canoe or in a boat and, you know, where things aren't happening, where there are no fish. If you can't tell a story and entertain your sport, then I think that you might be short for that job.
We're talking with John Holyoke. A collection of his great Bangor Daily News columns is out. It's called Evergreens. Okay, the one, why am I saving these two for last? Because I'm just going to tear up. I read it when it came out. I read it again in the book and sat there sobbing like a little boy. Goodbye, Pudge. Oh, man.
Holy cow. Yeah. That's, you know, Pudge was my Springer Spaniel, and I kind of get choked up now. He's been gone for a number of years, but I had always heard people go into mourning after they lost an animal, and I didn't understand it. And then he was my first child, really. And, you know, the thing I remember writing about in that column was that the house didn't sound the same anymore. We always knew when someone was in the driveway because his toenails would start clicking and clacking on the hardwood floors. And, you know, that column was written pretty close to after we had to have him put down. And, you know, you never get over it, really.
No. And you had trained him. Yeah. I remember reading the columns about you taking him into the woods, and you form a different bond.
Yeah, you did. Yeah. And I was glad to be able to introduce him to so many people through the outdoor shows that he went to, and he'd be part of the BDN staff. And I was glad to be able to tell his story. He was a neat critter.
Well, and certainly you got your storytelling gift from another guy you write about, your dad, Vaughn, who was just such an unbelievable, unforgettable guy. And man, just ripped my heart out. Because I knew about Snow Camp through your brother and your column about him not being there at Snow
he
Camp.
He wasn't there. Last couple times that we went, he wasn't there. He was he had Alzheimer's, and he was becoming a real shell of the man that we knew. That was a really tough time for the family. But, you know, I'm sitting there at Snow Camp that year, and I said, Snow Camp is what we called our ski vacation every year to go to Sugarloaf as a family, sometimes 20 of us in the same condo. And I said, you know, I got to write something about this. Writers write. But I didn't know how my mom was going to take it. And so I said, I want to write about Dad not being here. He was in a facility. My mom was there. She said, I trust you do what you want to do. So I wrote it. And I was crying writing it. It was, yeah, I think it's a pretty powerful one, I think. And he's one of those guys, you're right, the stories, I think, started with him. When we would go out to eat when we were kids, my dad, it would take him 10 minutes to get out of a restaurant because he knew everybody.
Oh, yeah.
And he had some story to tell to everybody. And so we'd be over at the door waiting for him to get through working the crowd on the way out. And that's just, you know, that's just the way he was. So thank you for mentioning that, Colin. That's one of my favorites.
Well, and the outdoors, John, it's about those traditions, and it's so much about family, too. And you've got your own kids. Are kids today taking advantage of the outdoors and getting out there the way previous generations did? You know, Butch Carter talked about this a few minutes ago about, you know, kids and technology and how that's impacting them. Are you seeing from your own experience that young people are out there the way a previous generation was?
I don't think there are. You know, I'd heard stats that there has been a real decline in, for instance, youth hunting licenses in Maine over the last 15 years. There's a lot of stuff that's, some of it's technology probably getting in the way. Some of it is non-nuclear families not being together where there's a single parent that has to play so many different roles that recreational role of taking someone out in the woods just doesn't happen so frequently. Another part is I don't know that kids go outside and just play on their own as much as we did.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see kids getting shuffled out the door and say, hey, don't come back until right. The streetlights come on.
Exactly. You know? It's not raining out. Why are you inside?
Right. So I think there's just a change in culture of what people do that has led to probably fewer young people taking advantage of the outdoors that we have here in Maine.
Well, Evergreens is just wonderful. It's a great celebration of the outdoor life in Maine. It's funny. It's poignant. You're going to love it. And if you've already read John's columns, it doesn't matter. I read them all. I read them again in this book, and it's so great. Where can people get their hands on it?
So there are advance. You can order in advance. Islandportpress.com has an advance order. Briar Patch Books in Bangor is taking advance orders as well. If you have a local bookstore that you like, I'd suggest you go to them, see if they'll order it for you. Also, we have a book launch event going on. October 22nd is when it officially becomes available. We're doing it at the Bangor Arts Exchange downtown.
Excellent.
It's going to be a ticketed event. It's going to be a conversation with me, and our facilitator is going to be Matt Dunlap, the Secretary of State.
Right.
Who is an outdoorsman and a funny guy. And we're going to swap some stories and tell some tales and have some fun. It's a ticketed event, but you don't have to pay anything. You can go to Eventbrite. It's Brite.com and search for Bangor events. And free tickets are available, or you can pay $18 and get a book with it.
Well, and a shout out to the people at Islandport, because man, they're doing such a great job.
They've done a great job. Dean Lunt, he's the guy down there that I've been dealing with. And, you know, I went and I spoke with him right off the bat when I was getting ready to maybe pitch a book. And he said, well, you know, he's explaining to a group of us of what it is they do. And he says, well, we like to say we tell stories. And I said, hey, I do that too. Maybe we can get together and tell some stories. So that's really been the way it has been. It's been a great partnership thus far.
Excellent. Well, we wish you much success with it. Continued good health and all that sort of thing. And enjoy your time in the woods and waters this fall.
I will. Thank you very much for having me, Rich. Appreciate
John Holyoke here with us. The book is called Evergreens.